excited to be back with Michael Rossi. We have not talked since he was with a totally different team. He is with the Atlanta Falcons now. Very excited to chop it up with him. How are you doing, Michael?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me back. Although obviously the conversation is probably a little bit different this time than it was last time.
Yes, just slightly different. A different
reason. Teams remarkably similar though, Steph. Like remarkably in like their general kind of trajectory potential.
That's actually super interesting. So we'll dive right into it. Talking about the draft, talking about Atlanta's draft. I think they did great. I think they had an overall good draft. What were like some likes, some dislikes as far as their draft went?
Yeah, I mean, we'll start with the dislikes. I mean, they didn't draft a running back, but depending how you feel about that, like philosophy-wise, at the end of the day, that's not the biggest deal in the world because how many running backs have we seen that have been incredibly good that end up undrafted? You know, Phillip Lindsay, obviously a very, very recent option. Another one, James Robinson down in Jacksonville. You find guys that are undrafted that can do that. Plus, they have a bevy of running backs on the roster. Obviously, signed Mike Davis, signed Cordarrelle Patterson, who's more of an offensive option, offensive weapon, however you would want to describe him. But you have a bunch of other guys like Olison and Brooks James that are younger guys that haven't really maybe gotten a shot yet. So I think that they're okay at running back, but we'll see how all of that really goes. I think Kyle Pitts was the smartest pick they could have made. Mm-hmm. My whole philosophy was you don't take a quarterback if you think that Matt Ryan's playing for you in 2022, because then the whole point of taking a quarterback is you get the rookie contract and you can build around the rookie contract with the quarterback. And if you sit whoever they took, you know, say they would take either at that point, Justin Fields or Mac Jones. Mm-hmm. And then that player is sitting for 2 years. Well, you wasted 2/4 of that rookie deal, 2/5, you know, depending on how you feel about that option. And you still don't know if he's the guy.
Right.
To replace Matt Ryan. So to me, you take Kyle Pitts, a guy you know that's going to be able to be on the field right away. A big theme of their draft was versatility, and he can play outside. He can play in the slot. He can play in line. And I think that was a really smart pick. And that was the thing throughout the majority of their draft was versatility. Jalen Mayfield, their third round pick, can play tackle or guard. Mm-hmm. Drew Dahlman can play guard or center. Richie Grant can play either safety spot or maybe even corner. Same with Darren Hall, the fourth round pick. Avery Williams, their corner who they took in the sixth round at Boise State, he could be defender at corner, maybe even safety. Mm-hmm. He's a return man. Arthur Smith even said maybe offense for him. Like there's just multiple guys that the Taquan Graham, who they took on the defensive line in the fifth round. He's a guy who can play every spot on the defensive line. So most of the players they took are guys that have that versatility. And that to me was something that I think was very important because you're looking at a roster, frankly, that has a lot of really good elite top end talent, but the middle class of the roster, the depth of the roster is not great right now. And just because of the cap with the numbers the way they are, you need guys who you know who can play versatile spot, multiple spots, because if you say all of a sudden you come down with a rash of injuries at corner, well, you have two safeties that are rookies that you can slide in and maybe be your fifth. And that's helpful.
Yeah. And that's something that even I saw with my home team, the New York Giants, is I saw a lot of these players, the consistency there was these guys can play on special teams. They can play outside. They can play more than one position. And I think for a team that's, I don't want to say completely in a rebuild, but I think in this, you know, they finished 4-12, the Falcons last year. I think, you know, they're not
5-11. Yeah.
Yeah. So like there's still some improvement that needs to be made. I think that, you know, I think Matt Ryan, you look at his stats. I was looking at them before we jumped on here. And, you know, I think there's a reason to still be confident in him. He's pretty consistent. You know what you're going to get with Matt Ryan. And I do think that if they believe that he can still play, there was no reason to pass up on someone like Kyle Pitts, who is very NFL ready. And realistically, can play wide receiver, basically. It's like what he plays, you know, he's essentially this like tight end wide receiver combo. So I think that was a good move for them.
Yeah. Don't tell Kyle Pitts that, by the way. He's very bad. He's a tight end, you know, but that's the thing is you can move him a bunch of different spots. They did that at Florida. They even did that way back for him at high school, Archbishop Wood in Philadelphia. So that's a role or roles that he's very comfortable in. And I think he'll fit well in Arthur Smith's offense. The thing with Matt Ryan, and I forget whether I was on before the Matthew Stafford trade or after the Matthew Stafford trade, but I feel like we talked about this where like Matthew Stafford is very underappreciated in Detroit. And I'm getting to a point here that fits with Matt Ryan in that But then you go and ask a fan, you ask somebody in the league, you ask, you know, whoever it may be, well, would you rather have Matthew Stafford or quarterback X? And more than half the time, they're still saying Matthew Stafford. Well, I still think you can have that same conversation with Matt Ryan is, would you rather have Matt Ryan or X? Now, Matt Ryan is not a mobile quarterback. We all know that, but he's accurate. He's consistent. He very rarely gets hurt, and you know what you're getting out of him. Yes, mm-hmm. Does he make a couple of really bad interceptions a year? Yes, he does. There are a couple where you're like, why did you throw that? But for those two or three passes a year, he also is generally getting you 25 to 30 touchdowns, and he's somebody you don't have to worry about. You know what you're getting, and in that offense, I think that Arthur Smith's going to get the best out of him because all of a sudden – as of today, at least, they have Julio Jones, Calvin Ridley, Kyle Pitts, Russell Gage, Mike Davis, mm-hmm. like Cordarrelle Patterson. Like, you have all of these options. Now, we'll see what happens with Julio Jones, but there is this immense amount, didn't even mention Hayden Hurst, immense amount of pass-catching talent, of skill mm-hmm. position talent, that it should be really easy for Matt Ryan to just be a distributor if mm-hmm. Arthur Smith runs the offense that we all think he's going to, and that I think could lead to a really good season for Matt Ryan. And then at that point, if he has a good 2021 season, unless Matt Ryan wants to move on, why would you move on from him for 2000?
Right. If it's not broke, don't fix it kind of thing. That's like the only phrase that's popping right into my head is it's working. And I think also there's something in him being this veteran in this leadership role. And then when you bring on younger guys, it's nice to not have a change. You know, Matt Ryan's been there. He's been consistent. He's not someone that you necessarily need to move on at that moment, like a team that, you know, like Big Ben probably should have been considering leaving a little bit sooner than I would ever consider Matt Ryan, in my opinion. I think he's a very functional quarterback and you know exactly what you're getting with him. But, well, you did mention Julio Jones. What do we think is happening there?
Honestly, I don't know. Generally, I'm a big believer of where there's smoke, there's definitely something going on, and there's a lot of smoke going on around it. And it's confirmed smoke, too, in that Terry Fontenot said, yeah, they're going to listen to offers for any player. Now, any GM is going to always say that, more than likely, right? But the reality is they're not going to listen to an offer for Matt Ryan. They're not going to listen to an offer for Calvin Ridley. They're not going to listen to an offer for Jake Matthews. They're not going to listen to an offer for Deion Jones. They're not going to listen to an offer for guys that they have just restructure mm-hmm. because you did that, like, that's such, you're doing this, like, if you're cap healthy, you're not trading Julio Jones. Like, this is a complete, like, hey, they have to figure out a way to manage this cap and get out from the cap disaster that Thomas Dimitroff left them in, and Julio Jones getting rid of him might be that solution. It's not a move that I sense anybody wants to make, mm-hmm. but it's a move that if the right offer came up, I think they would. It would not shock me if Julio Jones is on the roster week one. It would not shock me if Julio Jones is not on the roster week one. And I say that because I think if the right offer comes up, yeah, they would make the move. If the right offer doesn't come, and I think we saw that with Fontenot in the draft, like, he's not going to do something just to do something. He knows what he wants. And if he doesn't get that, I mean, there are other ways to get around the cap situation besides dealing Julio Jones. There may not be things that they want to do necessarily. Restructuring Julio Jones, maybe restructuring Grady Jarrett. Like, there are a couple of other options, but I think that they're leaving all of their options open, and that's what I took that as. Now, we'll see what happens in the next couple of weeks, because, I mean, June 1st is kind of that day where they can make that move, mm-hmm. and right now they're enough. They don't have enough money to sign their rookie class.
Wow.
So they have to do something, because they have to get those guys under contract. Now, listen, those contracts are slotted. Those contracts, very rarely is there much wiggle room as far as negotiating. Mm-hmm. Like, you kind of know what you're getting, especially, you know, other than maybe a Kyle Pitts or, you know, a Richie Grant,
right.
maybe even a Jalen Mayfield, where maybe you can negotiate in, like, you know, some bonuses here and there. Like, it's pretty straightforward. So they just need the money to do that. And I think that's kind of where things are sitting and where they're waiting on it. And we'll find out, I think, really soon enough what that's going to look like for the Falcons, because it doesn't make sense to move him before June 1st. Now, they could agree to something before June 1st, but mm-hmm. it doesn't make something, it would make no sense for them to do something before June 1st officially right. with Julio Jones. Now, is Julio Jones still on this roster in training camp? We'll see. I honestly, I don't have a good feel for that one mm-hmm. way or the other.
Yeah. And I think also, you know, as much as Julio Jones is the player that we all love and he's fantastic, fantastic football player, I don't think it kills their depth as much as some people are making it out to be. I think that there's still weapons there. They even added someone, I think it was their last round pick, Frank Darby from Arizona State, who I think has a lot of potential. So I think that as much as it would be painful to see Julio Jones move on from the Falcons organization, I think also you're not killing the depth entirely there. You still have options, whereas some teams don't have that depth option.
Right. And that's the thing. And this is, I think that's an area where you can look at it and say, well, okay, if the Falcons were to move on, were to trade Julio Jones, you still have a number one receiver because Calvin Ridley is a number one. Like he is. Like you just had the luxury of having 2-1. You have Kyle Pitts, who, as we talked about before, could play on the outside some if you need him to, but he's definitely a pass catch. You have Russell Gage. Mm-hmm. I am very high on Russell Gage. I think he can play. I think he's going to be really good. You have Zach Maius, who didn't really play all that much last year, but has a lot of talent. And as you mentioned, they drafted Frank Darby. Frank Darby's a really good deep ball threat. Obviously nowhere in the caliber of Julio Jones, but that's another guy. And if he's your fourth or fifth receiver, that's okay. Plus they have other guys on their roster too. And as we have seen in this league, I know you're a Giants person, like you've seen it with the Giants, guys that you don't know that you have never heard of, you know, guys like David Tyree, like come out of nowhere and can make plays. And that's the thing with receiver in the NFL, especially I think even more so now with how the game is changing in college, that having a one is important, but they still have that with Calvin Ridley. So it's an area where if you choose to move on from Julio Jones, yes, he's the best receiver, arguably the best receiver in franchise history. Some people might argue Roddy White. But he's one of the best players in franchise history. He's a future Hall of Famer. He's somebody who's, to my understanding, I'm not even in Atlanta yet, but like physically, but is beloved in Atlanta. Like you're moving on from a franchise icon, and that's hard. But every franchise moves on from franchise icons at some point. The Giants move on from Eli Manning. The Lions trade Matthew Stafford. The Lions see Calvin Johnson retire. Yeah, I mean, and the list goes on with every team ever. I mean, the Packers, you know, Brett Favre, and we'll see what happens with Aaron Rodgers. And, every team at some point runs into this situation. The Panthers with Cam Newton last year, like that, and it just happens. And it's never fun for a fan base. It's never an easy situation. I wrote a story earlier this year about quarterback team divorce and how you can maybe see it coming, but what that's really like because you're off in the cornerstone. Well, a guy like Julio is similar to that because he has been around for so long and is like face of the franchise type player. And it's hard. It's hard on everybody involved. It's not like an easy thing for teams to do. Now, granted, the Falcons have a whole bunch of new people in the building, so there's maybe not that level of attachment, but Arthur Blank is still there. So Rich McKay is still there. So it's a hard, it's not something that like anybody loves doing. It's not, from a human perspective, it's hard, but at some point you're going to move on from all of these players anyway. And it's just a question of when that comes and how that happens. Do you think of how many great players in the NFL finish their career in another uniform? Mm-hmm. Besides the one they're wearing, Tom Brady, Peyton Manning included.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely. I think it happens, and it's obviously hard for the fan base, but you have to look at it like big picture, look down the road instead of looking at next year. Like, are you making the best decision for the next 5 years versus like tomorrow? Are we winning like the season opener sort of thing? But we'll stay on the, let's go right to the NFC South. Look at a big picture of that entire, what do you think is going to happen over there? How are the Saints looking, the Bucks looking, the Panthers looking? Because there's a lot of movement, other than the Bucks, a lot of like kind of up in the air. What's happening?
Well, it's interesting, right? Because the Bucks decided to go with the like, just going to keep everybody mentality. And we'll see how that works out. Very rarely do we see teams go back to back. Very rarely do we see teams run it back, even when they keep a large portion of their core, like Kansas City last year, as an example. So it's going to be, that's going to be fascinating to see, because don't forget, it really seemed like the Bucks caught on late in the season last year. And did they just find something that really clicked, or was that kind of their last burst of getting maybe hot? And we'll see what happens here. you know, early, I think, in the 2021 season. New Orleans, I don't think anyone really has a clue because you don't know who's going to be playing quarterback. Is it going to be Jameis Winston? Is it going to be Taysom Hill? They have a lot of great pieces around those two, around the quarterback. So I think they'll be competitive, but we just, or is, does Ian Book surprise everybody? Because they took him in the fourth round. I'm high on Ian Book. I thought he would be a really good late round quarterback pick for, say, the Falcons, who did not take a quarterback, but they had signed AJ McCarron. They brought in Felipe Franks. So I would be very curious to see what Ian Book looks like. And if Ian Book ends up, you know, by week 17, if things aren't going well in New Orleans, maybe Ian Book is your week 16, week 17 starter, but we'll see. Then there's Carolina. And I think there's a big mystery there because if Sam Darnold can, I hate saying resurrect his career. I hate that saying, but if he can play how people really believed he could play with the Jets, if he can do that, then Carolina's maybe a really interesting team because they're going to get Christian McCaffrey back and they have good receivers. Their defense is pretty good. I mean, Brian Burns is a heck of a player. You know, they're only one defensive player, but that defense has some potential there. So I think they're kind of a question mark. And I think the Falcons are a question mark. Two teams that are definitive question marks in the Falcons and the Panthers, a team that if they get decent quarterback play is going to be in that playoff mix at the very least in New Orleans. And then probably what your NFC favorite in Tampa, just because of what they did. But as we talked about before, Tom Brady's a year older. Rob Gronkowski's a year older. Mm-hmm. All these guys are a year older, and some, including some vets that when it's a year older, that's when it gets questionable. We're not talking the Mike Evanses and Chris Godwins of the world, you know, and the Shaq Barretts of the world where they're still in their prime. You got other guys that's like, father time can creep up real quick, and we've seen that. So that to me, I think, is the question with the Bucs is if they are all healthy again, I absolutely think they can run it back. But that's going to be a big question. Are they healthy? Are they at the same skill set level that they were a year ago?
Right. And I always wonder, too, because we have to remember COVID did play a huge part in last season. So how much is that going to impact next year? I know we saw even last year's rookie class, a lot of them got robbed of that training camp. And how is that year going to impact? We have no idea. There's a lot of teams that have really young guys that didn't really get that summertime that they normally do.
I think it's going to be as bad this year.
No.
Because every team is having rookie minicamp either last weekend or the majority of the NFL this weekend. It looks like there's going to be some on-field work at some point in the spring. There hasn't been a lockdown situation because you have to remember, not to go back to the Lions again, but Romeo Okwara, right? He had a breakout season last year, got paid in the offseason. He did the first part of his training literally with kegs and fire pits and using like water bottles and anything that they could find to train. Him and James Onuwalu, who is a linebacker for the Raiders, they were good friends, played at Notre Dame together. They were living at a house in LA when the shutdown started, and that was where they could train. Well, guys have been able to train and do stuff in like normal training situations this year, and I think that that's going to help. I think where it hurt was the scouting, that part was where it technically hurt, but we'll see. I'd be really curious to see if teams feel like they hit better on the draft this year than in prior years. If they're kind of like, you know what, it changes the value of what matters. Like I did a story on Steve Barkowski, which, you know, is a name that is way, way back there from 1975. And he was the number one pick of the draft. He was the first quarterback ever, first pick to pick in the Super Bowl era to get traded up for it to be taken in the first round. And the Falcons traded up to number one to get him. They traded with the Baltimore Colts for number three. But when I was talking to different people for that story, they were like, scouting was different. There was no combine. The pro days were before the senior season. Mm-hmm. Teams went off of production and game film. And I think you saw more of that this year. And generally you had good teams found picks that were good and guys played and the hit rate was just as good, if not better maybe than what we see now where some guys get overvalued because of the combine. Some guys get overvalued because they ran well at a pro day. Some guys get overvalued because there's months of time, because this draft, by the way, was in like late January. It was like 2 weeks after the season. People like us had a real offseason. It was great. I mean, I was not born at this time, but I'm assuming it was great. But you look at it and you're just like, well, like maybe sometimes there's too much time with play. I mean, think of the Trey Lance, Mac Jones conversation, how long that went on. And that, so that was a long tangential answer for, I think that's where things will be different. And I'll be curious to see. I don't think it's going to affect on-field play this year because I think you're going to have more of the fuller complement of stuff. And sure, vets maybe not showing up to the facility for voluntary workouts, but they're voluntary for a reason. And I've always felt like that was okay if guys didn't show up. And, you know, as long as you get your stuff done, that's really all that matters.
Right. Definitely. And I agree with you. I think you could see from the draft picks, and that's why I think a lot of people, there was some head scratchers, is because it was really scout based. You could tell there was a couple teams where they had their guys that they scouted and they were just crossing out names as they got taken, and then they were going with the guy that was available next. And like the New York Giants is one, you know, I always go back to them, but it's what I know so close to me is, you know, Kadarius Toney was like very confusing for everyone why he was taken at that spot. But I think it's because it was very scouting based this year. And I think you saw that with the way that they drafted. So I will be interested to see how this plays out now that we weren't basing everything off of these combine numbers, the way that has sometimes swayed people in the past. Another one I think of is Wilson after his pro day. I felt like everyone was very high on him after that. Like you know, you didn't hear as much chatter about him until you saw him slinging it down the field in a pro day. There was no one protected. He was just free. No one was coming at him. So I think that it's interesting how the pro day did change things. And you saw that even like on social media, on Twitter, you saw the way people's opinions shifted.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, and that's part of it too. I think that so much of this is covered more publicly now that there's sometimes more of those questions. I mean, think about it. 20 years ago, how many people did mock drafts? You know? Now if you don't do a mock draft, like, you know, you're in the very large minority. Yeah. So it's such a different deal now. There's so much run up. Obviously, social media, you can watch every pro day. Pro days are televised now. Mm-hmm. Like that wasn't in the past. The combine is televised now. Mm-hmm. That wasn't in the past. So like all of these things are as much in the past, I should say. Like there, a lot of these things are just so different than what they were. I mean, my first combine I went to was in 2000. I was covering Notre Dame. And it was like 2005, 2006, 2006, I think, or 2007. And it wasn't anything like it is now. Like literally you could grab a guy walking down the hall and talk to him like on the record, and like press conferences were very few and far between. There was like 100 people that covered it. Now there's like obviously no combine this year, over 1,000. Like, so the whole process of the scouting process has changed. And that's to me has always been interesting. And, you know, we've seen so many quote unquote workout warriors and what happens. And you always wonder, well, if they weren't over scouted like that, you just went off a film, what would happen?
Right. Absolutely.
It's definitely. Who knows?
Yeah. Absolutely. And I'll lean the direction back towards the Falcons because I do tend to go off topic here. Kind of starting to wrap up here. Looking at next year, what do you think the biggest challenge that this team will have moving into the new season? What is the one thing that probably will be the thorn in their side?
Playing defense. It's playing defense. I mean, they just have questions at every level. You have some high-end elite talent. Mm-hmm. At defensive tackle with Grady Jarrett, maybe at defensive end, outside linebacker with Dante Fowler, depending which Dante Fowler you get. Linebacker, you got Deion Jones and Foye Okeme, and Foye is really good, and Deion Jones obviously really good. Corner, you have some questions, but AJ Terrell showed flashes as a rookie last year. Mm-hmm. And then at safety, you have two veterans, and you drafted a lot of guys, so you have to think like Richie Grant might push his way into the starting lineup here. But they have no depth. And you don't really know how the scheme is going to work, except that Dean Pease loves to play a lot of safeties. And that was where their problems were last year. You look at the offense, you figure that Arthur Smith is an offensive coach. He's running the offense. I'd be surprised if they have much problem there, whether Julio is on the team or not. Mm-hmm. And you can basically know what you're going to get because that core largely has been together. Again, Julio or not, and you can add Kyle Pitts in, but Pitts to me is a very much you can plug him in and he's going to produce for you. So to me, it's defense and what their defense does. If Dean Pease can turn this defense around and can get the most out of a bunch of guys, then I think they have a chance to maybe contend for a playoff spot. If they can't, then their defense is a big problem. And, you know, the conversations around Matt Ryan's future, the conversations around if Julio Jones is on the team, Julio Jones's future, the conversations around a lot of guys ratchet up even more after the 2021 season, because then you start wondering whether, okay, are you going to blow a lot of it up and maybe really go toward more of a rebuild after 2021 if it doesn't work out for you?
Right
now, the way that they've constructed this team, it feels like they feel like they can at least make a run at this year.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I feel like there is no reason for them, you know, looking at it, looking at last year, looking at what they've done so far, for them to win more than the four games they did last year. So I think they're in a position to absolutely do better. They're on the up. But again, that defense, we'll see how it plays out. Thinking about their schedule, are you going to go to London? They have an international.
I hope so. That's a decision that's above my pay grade. If they let me go, I will go. I went for the Lions Falcons game actually in 2014. Okay. I did not go when the Lions played in 2015. And listen, I think some of that realistically is going to be based on the pandemic, because pandemic's still a big problem in Europe. I mean, still a problem here too in the United States, but it's still a very large issue in Europe right now with vaccinations and places are still shut down. So we'll see what happens when we get closer to that. I mean, I hope to go to London. I love Europe. I have friends in London, but I don't know for sure whether that's going to happen yet. We haven't had those conversations.
Right. You're still, you know, packing your things up and I'm asking you about London.
I got to leave Michigan and go to New York for a few days and then go down to Atlanta first before I can start thinking about any of that. Like that's when my bosses come and ask, that's when we'll talk about it. I'm not going to inquire until then, because at the end of the day, it's going to be their decision. They know I would want to go. So I'm just leaving that up to them.
Okay. So easier question than if you're going to London is, and we'll wrap up here, is how do we feel about the season opener against Philly? How do we feel like Philly, where does Philly stand? Do they feel like a threat? Does it feel like a winnable game? Cause Philly's another question mark in my book. I'm not too confident in, you know, I like what they've done. It's hard time for me to put the pieces together.
I mean, yeah, I think it's absolutely a winnable game, because a couple of reasons. One, you don't know exactly what Arthur Smith's offense is going to look like. You don't exactly know what Dean Pease's defense is going to look like. So they have that minimal element of surprise, although Dean Pease has been coaching forever. And Arthur Smith, you know what you saw in Tennessee. But Philly's roster is not, you know, it's not like this world beater roster. Don't know exactly what's going to happen at quarterback, whether it's going to be Joe Flacco or going to be Jalen Hurts. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you never know what's going to happen week one. I think we all know this. Steffi, you've been around the league. You know that week one sometimes produces really wacky results. And, you know, sometimes those results pan out. You're like, wow, that team, you know, blew out the other team 49-10. And maybe this team's good. And then they prove to be good, or it proves like, no, they just caught them and, you know, like all that. And I mean, I think you saw that last year too, where there was some really bad football in that first month. There always is some rough football in that first month of the season, but last year there was a lot of it. I think it won't be like that as much this year, but I think it's a winnable game for them. It's at home. Fans are going to, as far as we can tell, be allowed back. And I think that, you know, I'm never a big believer all that much in like the home field road advantage, with the exception of a couple places in the NFL. You know, I covered colleges for 15 years, more or less, and or 10, I don't even remember. I think it was 10. Somewhere between 10 and 15 years. And
ballpark.
Yeah, ballpark. Somewhere in there. But you saw that like home field advantage mattered in college football. In the NFL, I don't think it matters quite as much. Mm-hmm. However, I think that first week, that first home game for teams, especially after fans basically were not allowed in last year, if they're allowed to be in full capacity, I think it's going to matter greatly, because I think that it's going – I don't know if you're a boxing MMA person or not, but like there's been a couple fights that have had full capacity or close to it fans, a couple MMA fights that have had close capacity, full capacity fans. And I've just watched it on TV. I haven't covered a fight in person yet. Well, I take that. I covered one fight in person. There were like 500 fans there. So that, I'm not counting that. Mm-hmm. But like see the full capacity stuff on television now. And you can sense the difference. And that was something that, you know, I took for granted when I would cover, whether it was fighting or whether I would cover football in the past. Like you took advantage of, you took, you know, for granted the crowd. And it was so strange for players, for coaches, even for media last year, not having it, that I think if a crowd is back and if it's close to full capacity or at full capacity, I think that in week one, that's one of those things that can really maybe energize a team, especially late in the game, especially if those teams are evenly matched. I mean, I'll end this long conversation on this is that I remember talking, I was covering James Madison basketball, and I was talking to their coach at the time. It was women's basketball. I was talking to their coach, and he was telling me a story about how, like, there was a game when he was a player that it was so loud in their stadium, their basketball stadium, that they walked out and they knew before the game they were going to win because of how loud it was. And I think you could see that in some cases in the NFL this year, where usually I don't think that you see that as much. But I think that that home field advantage, the first game, that second game, home game for teams, it could really actually make a difference, in my opinion, for the first time this year.
Definitely. Especially some of these rookies, everyone remember, they haven't seen, they don't know what it's like to play in a full stadium. That sometimes that amazes me, like thinking about them. They've never played with a full fan base like that. So I think it'll be interesting to see how just the little things like that. It's going to be a different year, but I think also just looking at the NFL as a whole, we're going to get some good football. Like there's some teams, you know, things are switching, you know, the big dogs are starting to dwindle down a little bit, and they've been holding these decades of glory, and you're seeing them start to crumble a little bit. So it's nice to see some new teams starting to rise to the top and be a little bit more of a powerhouse and a little bit more of a threat than in the past.
Probably not in Houston, though, because that team has...
Yeah, besides Houston.
That team's going to struggle. And honestly, if we're being real, like, I mean, I think, you know, the Lions roster, I think they've done a really good job, but they're a year or two away, I think, as well. I mean, you know, they're a team. This is the reality of the week, in my opinion. You've got five to six teams that you know are going to be really good. You have five, six teams that you know, they know it's going to maybe be a struggle for you this year. Everyone else, and that's the kind of the beauty of the NFL and why they create so much parity. You just don't know, and you end up somewhere in the 6-10 to 10-6 range. Yep. Well, 6-10 might get you fired, or you know, a ladder and top 10 pick. Well, 10-6 is going to get you in the playoffs more than likely, especially with seven teams. And the difference in that literally can be, I mean, I'm going to sound like a player or a coach, but it can be literally a handful to a dozen plays. And that's the difference. And like, well, that's kind of what I think makes the NFL so exciting is that there's that type of parity. It's not like the NBA, the NHL, Major League Baseball, where half of the teams know going in, like, well, not going to win a title here. Maybe not going to make the playoffs, you know, like, and you can talk, like, that's why when people talk about tanking in the NFL, it's so unrealistic because of just the reality of so many different things. But in the NBA, I mean, I'm still in Detroit, like I said, for another week or so. The Pistons have done, Dan Wetzel wrote a column about this. They've done an immensely good job tanking because now they're going to maybe get a top pick. And that's how you rebuild in the NBA, where in the NFL, it's much harder to do it that way.
Definitely. Sorry. You don't have to even tell me, because obviously as someone that has Evan Engram on her home team, she knows the difference in, you know, a bunch of passes being dropped and losing 35 points. That's about two games there that my friend lost for us. So that's the difference between six games and eight games. So it happens. You don't know. There's so much variability that could happen. So nothing is set in stone except for, you know, like you said, those top teams and those not so top teams.
We're now 2-for-2 on my appearances where you say something about Evan Engram.
Oh, crap. I can't do it. I wanted to do the redemption. I think that's a note for me to start signing off. But I have a hard time not. And I want him to do well, and I think he will, because the targets will be down, and he'll have a wide receiver one. Historically, he does play better that way. So I'm hopeful. The person I'm not hopeful about is Jason Garrett. But on that note, because I will talk all day, why don't you let everyone know where they can find you, what's coming up? I know you have the move, so just plug whatever.
I'm at Mike Rothstein on Twitter, on Instagram, on Clubhouse. I think I'm still using that. On Facebook, I'm Michael Rothstein Journalist. And you just reach out to me there. I usually try to be pretty interactive with fans and stuff like that. And more than happy to chat and answer whatever questions you might have.
Yeah. Great follow, guys. Go check him out. Follow him on Twitter. Great articles, too. I was trying to keep up with them. You know, life comes at you fast and you can't read everything that you want to. You run out of time. But thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it. Good luck with your move. I hope you get to go to London. Make sure you guys can follow me on Twitter at Sippy Smalls with 3 L's. You can follow on at OnBeat19. It's been a while. I'm a little rusty here for more shows and at Sleeper Wire. And we will catch you guys next time. Thank you so much, Michael.
No problem. Thanks for having me. Anytime.
Of course.